Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, April 2nd, 2015. Why did I put 14 on my notes? 2015 it is. Still doing the 2014 thing. Anyway, tonight's main science topic, I'm going to continue talking about electricity in the atmosphere, electrical conditions that affect you and your body. But first of all, a couple quick announcements. My DVD number 4, remember, on the webpage, the syllabus is there. I'm not going to repeat it here. But I want to encourage people to really take a close look at this. And let me give you a little bit of history on DVD number 4. It is what I guess a general term would be cosmology and galaxies. Galaxies are kind of the atomic structure of the cosmos. Within the galaxies, there are stars and other conditions. But the general cosmological picture that you're given today by standard science is that there was a Big Bang, the universe started, it's expanding, and that those ideas go back to the beginning of the 1900s when Edwin Hubble first had good telescopes. He was the first guy to really see galaxies and say, hey, there's big structures out there, and then almost immediately they took spectrum of the galaxies, and that equipment was already available, and they also had special relativity, which was laboratory proven at the time, which said if something is moving away from you, it should give you a red shift. If something is moving towards you, it should give you a blue shift. Red shift means that the frequency of light is moving towards the red end of the spectrum. In other words, you are getting a lower frequency light. Blue shifting means it's being shifted up to the upper end of the frequency spectrum and implicating that it's coming to you, towards you. So this was all in place. So it was almost immediate that the expanding universe concept was born. Then general relativity came along, and the Eddington experiment was done in, I believe, 1915. So all of this in the very early part of the 20th century. But the Eddington experiment, where they went and traveled to a tropical location, took photographs of a stellar configuration prior to that, and then with the eclipse of the sun, noticed that the stars had moved outwards, and then it was just railroaded in, because Eddington was a big proponent of the Big Bang, of the of general relativity, and they were kind of nose in the air kind of people. They said only 3 people in the world understand general relativity, and so everybody else had to stand in line and accept this. The end result is that Einstein in 1950 to 54, before he died, I think he died in 54, said, hey, general relativity doesn't cut it. There's no experimental evidence. There's no, he's the one that designed the Gedanken, the think experiment of general relativity called the elevator analogy, where you are in an elevator accelerating at some acceleration, equivalent, let's say, to that of Earth, 32 feet per second squared, and with, a rocket engine behind the elevator. And if you put light in one hole in one side of the elevator, then it's going to curve down and come out a little bit below that line in the other side. And so the principle of equivalence says that if you're in a gravitational field, which gives you that same pull, so to speak, or gravitational acceleration, then like the gravity of the Earth or the Sun or a supermassive black hole or whatever, that light should bend. But towards the end of his life, Einstein said, hey, you know, there's something missing here. How come gravity supposedly affects the bending of light when we don't know of any electromagnetic force? And this is what I discovered when I was at Cornell 1979 to 1981. I discovered the induced electric dipole redshift, and it was due to a tremendous amount of investigatory work that I did there, plus data that I was able to see that nobody else had access to that was not published but is reproducible. And that's the beauty, is that this data is all reproducible by very simple experiments that are available today using satellites, etc. So without giving a lot more information, I encourage people to go and take a look at this coursework, because this sets the stage for solar system development. At any rate, what I did was to restructure cosmology. And this was done, the restructuring was done in the late 70s, let's put it that way. But it was the data and the access to information at Cornell that allowed me to solidify all of this. And so this course really is a reflection of that, plus a lot of new material since then. But this sets the stage for solar system development, and on and on. Anyway, I encourage you to go look at this, and I'll admit that this first course is a bit expensive. But I want you to understand there's a lot of things that go on in the background that I have to do to cover costs. And so understanding that this is not going to be a New York Times bestseller list item, DVD number 4, I have to charge enough. But then the future DVDs are going to be $50 each. And a vast majority of my material, this radio show is commercial free. I pay for it every week out of my own pocket. The web page, chock full of material, all of that is free. But at a certain point, there's two reasons why I have to charge for certain material. One is because it's a tremendous amount of work to assemble it all and put it into a format where it's digestible by you, the public. And second of all, to protect it. There's a protection aspect of my work, because I don't publish in peer-reviewed journals. I don't have anything to do with all of that phony baloney where scientists literally lose the right to their work by publishing in so-called peer-reviewed journals. Not a single scientist out there in that system owns their work like I do. I own my work. And I have to, that's part of the process, is to protect it, because plagiarism of my work is just rampant. And so not only from the government, but lots of ding-dongs that run around the internet trying to pretend like they know something. So anyway, it's part of the protection aspect of publishing my work in a protected, copyrighted format, not just talking about it on the air, etc. Okay, so enough of that, but I encourage you to go to the webpage, DVD number 4. And by the way, if you order over $400 worth of products, you will get the DVD for free. So that's a good deal. In fact, by the way, my books and DVDs and CDs, the prior work, is required reading, so you're going to understand this new set of coursework, because I'm not going to repeat in the DVD all of the material that came in the prior books. So this is an ongoing, this is a high-level, university-level course. But you could order, for example, the book set, the library, the CDs, the DVDs, and they're available in ebook format or in print format, and then also water filter products, the Recalendar Sunstar clock. Many times I forget that a lot of new people are listening and don't know about these. So anyway, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. A few quick comments. The German Wings flight. Wow. I have been investigating this, and all of the information that is coming out about voice recorders, about people screaming on the voice recorder when the plane is going down and the pilot pounding on the door, is a bunch of baloney. They find the torn up note. Remember, after 9/11, the entire Pentagon is, the entire plane has disintegrated. And they find a passport completely intact of supposedly one of the hijackers who had a box cutter. So the entire side of the Pentagon is missing all the way through, blasts a hole through the other side of the Pentagon, which are like 4 feet thick walls. The entire plane is missing. There's not a shred of the airplane left, of all of the metal and the wings and the engines and the other dense metal parts. There's not a shred of this airplane left. Yet they find a passport perfectly intact of one of the hijackers. Isn't that convenient? But anyway, this whole deal of the airplane going down, German wings airplane, something is seriously fishy here about that airplane going down. It's in classic CIA style where the plane is flying along, all of a sudden it dives down. They already got the cover story made up. They also already have their patsy. The supposedly the co-pilot who had psychological problems, and they find a note conveniently torn up that supposedly he tore up that said he was unfit to fly. Anyway, something seriously fishy about all of that. This report in from a listener from Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, near Tulsa. 64 trailer homes missing, hail, baseball size hail, estimated 5 tornadoes. This is 5 days ago, I believe, and 24 killed, 300 injured, serious tornado conditions. But what I wanted to mention is that in talking about trailer homes and the electrical conditions of tornadoes, something, this is part of my weather work to explain that tornadoes, cyclonic storms, hurricanes, typhoons, etc., are powered from the electrical vertical electric field that comes from the ionosphere. And imagine a trailer court. Now you have aluminum boxes sitting out in the field. They all have wire grounds coming from them into the ground, so they're grounded antennas. And here you come along with a electrical discharge from the ionosphere that's powering this storm, and on a flat plain, Oklahoma's flat, and all of a sudden you've got hundreds of aluminum boxes sitting out in an open field. Oh, what a draw for that electrical current. So there used to be a joke when I was a kid that trailer homes attracted tornadoes, and it was kind of like because the trailer courts were the ones that were always hit. It is true, and there's a scientific reason for that. Once again, thanks to a listener for that information, which really I didn't find in the news at all. So this was a local information on that killer tornado in Tulsa, Oklahoma, a week ago, within this past week. Also, I want to announce that this past week, and this is a very exciting moment, that a new manufacturing facility came online where my filter elements are being produced. And so there was a time when some of this was produced in England, and it was a complicated affair, and et cetera, but now the GF filters, all of my filters, in fact, are being produced in the United States and under guidance and production, complete production facility in the United States. So this is extremely exciting for me. And by the way, when people are buying water filters, oh my goodness, I hear these ads all the time, and nothing worse than being a guest on another show, and they're advertising, giving completely false advertising about other water filter products. And I don't mention names or anything like that. But what I've said on my webpage is if somebody is selling something, first of all, the simple question is the question you ask, can you sell your product in California, in Iowa? And if they can't, the reason is because of false advertising. California and Iowa have false advertising very strict laws. And there's other states like Massachusetts. So at any rate, the point is that with my filter elements, they are NSF. That's not National Science Foundation. It's the National Standards Federation for Water Filtration Products. My filter elements are nationally certified. So I do sell California, Iowa, Massachusetts. I can sell in all 50 states and all around the world. And so no matter what people tell you or what kind of amazing tests they have done, the majority of these tests that people have done themselves, they're not independent tests. And there's a national standard for water filtration. My filter elements adhere and are constantly being tested during the manufacturing process to adhere to the NSF standards, and they are certified. And so that is something, just if somebody tells you, gives you a song and dance about how great their filters are, just ask them that simple question. Just, you don't have to tell them. Just tell them, I want it shipped to Iowa. And when they tell you, oh, we can't ship it there, or tell them California, and they go, oh, we can't ship there, that's why. Because those states have banned those products. And they get arrested if they would sell them there. So anyway, that's the litmus test. But I'm very happy that now my filter elements 100% produced in the good old United States and under constant watchful eye. So here's something that popped up. ABC News came out with an item, and it said, This is the title. It says, "Why July the most dangerous for lightning strikes?" And I thought, gee, what what are they going to tell us? What amazing NOAA or National Weather Service theory are they going to try and pawn off on the public here about the reason why July is the lightning strikes? And actually, I talked about this. I was talking about people don't go out and golf when it's lightning. And I gave the little joke about the wine iron, etc. This was a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago at most. So anyway, then I was very intent on listening to this, and I saw the transcript also. So I read the transcript. And the reason is, there is this. I'm going to read this from the ABC News article. Here's the transcript. It says, "There is still so much mystery surrounding the brilliant bolts," implying lightning bolts. And it says, "We don't actually know what happens at the very moment lightning is born." So what they're telling you is they don't have a clue what causes lightning. And the reason I keep talking about the zero electric field inside clouds is because the standard lightning theory, supposedly, and now they're admitting they have no clue, but what they said before is the tumultuous wind and wind currents in the cold and the warm cloud masses or masses of air meeting is that the lightning in the updrafts and the downdrafts, etc., the charge separation occurs, and therefore that's the cause of lightning. Well, I've pointed out a million times on this show, in my books, etc., that lightning, if it somehow formed within a cloud, it wouldn't come shooting out of the cloud, out the tops and out the bottoms of the clouds. All of the reaction and the discharge would occur inside the so-called battery, inside the cloud. But when they sent experimental packages up into the clouds, they discovered that the electric fields were extremely minimal. And they're all puzzled. And so, as I pointed out, the electric field inside of a conductor that sits inside of an electric field is zero. This is basic electromagnetic theory. So, once again, the whole issue here is that meteorologists, space scientists, astronomers, and in many cases, you would think astrophysicists would have studied their physics. But in the case of meteorology, the last chemistry physics course these guys took was probably 101 in college. So how can they possibly understand the ramifications of electromagnetic theory? So at any rate, it's very interesting. They admit now that they have no idea what causes lightning bolts. Now, what a fundamental issue. There are tens of thousands of lightning bolts every day on planet Earth. It affects people's lives. It's the number one killer of young American males between the age of 20 and 35. It's the number one killer, yet standard science cannot tell you where a lightning bolt comes from. What's the cause of it? We're talking about serious energy in their world of gravity-only world. They have no idea. And when they do the measurements, well, I'm not going to go on about this. It's just beyond ridiculous. The new web page, I have a new sub page on my web page, and if you've been to my page in the last week, I left up a dissertation on the CIA. I left a dissertation on the CIA, and let me explain something. This doesn't do anything for me. I get no benefit from this at all. It diverts people's attention from my webpage. It's really not a benefit to me personally. I have my science work. That's what I want to concentrate my time on. It's a negative aspect, but I'll tell you something. The CIA is a big, big problem in the world. They have caused wars. They've caused diversion. They've caused misinformation. They are one international wrecking ball. They've assassinated presidents of other countries. Is this what the CIA is supposed to be doing? And now they're investigating and harassing citizens of the United States. Their charter says they should have nothing to do inside the walls of the United States. They're busy. They own Google. They own Facebook. They own Twitter. They own Wikipedia. They own on and on and on. Yahoo, the list is extensive. And so anyway, I have a new subpage. It's called CIA in the News. So, and it's in the science column. Now, on my webpage, if you go, apart from the first few announcements, there's a table, and it has three columns. The first column to the left is the science column that deals with science issues. The middle column deals with things like my radio show, The Thought of the Day, The Picture of the Day, and the Tesla Project, other things like that is in the middle column, and the right column is miscellaneous. But the first column is dealing with science, and in that column is the reference, the link, to the subpage called CIA in the News. Now, why would I include that in the science column? Because the CIA invests their illegal drug money into high technology. They're laundering their international drug money, for example, through a company called InQtel. Now, where does the CIA get money to buy and support, through venture capital, 600 high-tech companies? You know, this is beyond absurd. Where does this is not in the CIA charter to somehow fund high-tech companies. And where do they get the money to buy Google? Anyway, I'm not going to waste any more time in my show talking about that, but go to the web, my homepage, jmccsci.com, and go to the science column, and when you scroll down, you will see the link for it. It's called CIA in the News, and so go there and read that. Just another issue with the planet called Ceres. Now, once again, week after week, we're waiting for the big data outlay and information from NASA. It's just kind of like falling off the edge of the Earth. In mid-February, we're pushing April now. We're all waiting on needles and pins, waiting for that data from Ceres, and nothing, not a peep. Okay, so let me explain what is going on here, and I'll tie it in with the planet Mercury. Actually, a recent release that NASA did put out, which once again came out long after any data was taken. But Ceres, obviously, let's look at where it is. It's in an orbit around the Sun, between the orbits of Mercury and Jupiter. It's the biggest minor planet in the solar system. and it's round. It's literally a planet, but there's an astronomical definition that to be a planet, it has to be big enough to clear out the region from stuff like asteroids and minor other small objects. And so Ceres is not big enough to do that. It does not have enough gravitational impact. It would have to be something minimal, probably the size of Earth, to clear out all those asteroids, and it would take a long period of time. So Ceres does not qualify as such. From that point of view, it doesn't qualify as a planet. But it's big, it's round, it's self-gravitational when it was in the molten state was sufficient to pull it together in a sphere. So it qualifies in that definition as a planet. But no data at all. So let's look at where it is. It's in that region where there's an abundance of asteroids and the comets. It's a region where comets can hang out for quite a period of time as they wind their way in through the solar system. And so obviously Ceres probably has had some serious electromagnetic interactions with other objects. And so its surface would be pockmarked with what would obviously be electrical discharges. Okay, so on a planet like that, that's the majority ice, you would be able to tell that these are not impact craters, one for number one thing, and also the a planet like that, which allegedly is supposedly mostly water ice, would cover itself over. Any impacts would soon be kind of eaten up and glossed over. They would recover. In other words, they wouldn't be that visible. So a lot of impact activity would implicate that Ceres had recent activity with electromagnetic activity, but primarily electrical discharges as the comets passed by, and some of them got to the point where Ceres were within their Debye shielding and caused electrical discharges. And so go back to my lectures a number of weeks ago when I talked about the shielding around comets. And so anyway, I would say that's probably the main thing. They're photoshopping the goodness out of any photos from Ceres before they're administered to the public. That's what's going on. They're very busy photoshopping. Okay, now let's go to Mercury. This past week, I put a posting on my page, center column, on my homepage, dealing with the planet Mercury. Now, there was a paper that was published in, I think it was Nature, by a NASA scientist. Nature is the English version of science. And these are supposedly peer-reviewed journals, but NASA gets rubber stamp publishing in those, and of course nobody else gets to ask any questions or have any input into this. But it turns out that Mercury is a very black planet. Now, why would Mercury be black? So anyway, they conjectured that, like with all NASA theories, if they can't explain it, an asteroid hit it and made it black. So they said, well, asteroids and comets hit Mercury to the point where the pulverized material was black and therefore covered Mercury and made it black. But when you look at the photos that they released of Mercury, the impact craters are bright, very, very bright. And so the material that comes out in rays from the impact, which would have been the material from the impacting object, is very light in color. So it's their explanation is exactly opposite of what the pictures actually show. So let me explain what actually is happening. Mercury, as with all the planets in the solar system, as with any object in the solar system, is discharging the solar capacitor. And Mercury is close to the sun, so it gets a lot of activity, a lot more stressful activity, with solar blasts of especially high-energy protons, giving it a much, locally, a much higher capacitor discharge gradient than the rest of the solar system. So anyway, carbon is a common element in the solar system, and would be heavier with the heavier elements like carbon in closer to the sun. It would just be a common species near the sun. And also hydrocarbons, etc., are common throughout the entire solar system. So the comet effect, the discharge of the solar capacitor, would coat Mercury with hydrocarbons. Now, we have hydrocarbons coming into Earth all the time. The ancients talk about when we encountered the comet Venus, as it moved in through the solar system and the tail drag reduced its orbital eccentricity, and as it became eventually the planet Venus in the orbit inside of Earth. But we passed through the comet tail a number of times, and the ancients talk about the hydrocarbons, the falling in from above the burning naphtha. Okay, so at any rate, the going back to Mercury, Mercury acts as a comet. But Mercury does not have an atmosphere, and it's way too close to the sun to maintain an atmosphere. It's just any atmosphere is going to get blown away by that in very intense solar wind near the sun. So Mercury really has never had an atmosphere. It's just like our moon, very much without an atmosphere. So it bakes on the surface the hydrocarbons, which make it black. And when something comes by, either an impact, which is very common because it's near the sun. The sun is attracting a lot of debris, let's put it that way. But also the fact that comets come in near the sun and they're very active. They're very electrically active when they come near the sun for that same reason. The gradient near the sun is very high, the electrical gradient. And that's why we see comets near the sun discharging the solar capacitor, and that intense electrical discharge kicks off solar flares. And that's another reason for understanding my theoretical work that says the fusion at the sun is at the surface, not down at the core. And by the way, just a little side note, my new coursework takes you, the student, through this entire calculation of the showing you why the fusion of the sun cannot possibly be in the core. And so that's an ongoing issue. I'll be dealing with the sun and some future issues. But the proof for the fact that the sun, mathematical proof that you can understand yourself, and why rows and columns of PhDs out there repeat this, baloney, complete baloney, that somehow the fusion of the sun is at the core. When I talked to a guy named Hans Bethe when I was at Cornell, he knew that there were problems with that model. And so when I was explaining to him that, no, the fusion of the sun is up at the surface. It's ignited by high-energy electron beams or lightning bolts in the atmosphere, and the same is going on in Jupiter and Saturn. And that's why what I call the Cornell years, my 1979 to 81, when I was on the physics and mathematics faculty of that school, and I was seeing this data come in, I knew that I was right about the surface fusion, and later the Russians proved that with a very simple experiment that's provided. I reiterate that experiment in my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, by the way, which is, all of this is written for the general public. It's fairly high-level sophisticated material, but written for the general public. So back to little Mercury. So the sun in the region around it in which Mercury lies is a region where comets are prevalent. And so we have two things happening. Occasional impact from a comet, but more likely an electrical discharge from a comet. And these electrical discharges are fairly significant, and they don't just leave one crater. They leave an entire path. So look at the picture on my homepage. Go down to the center column to the thought of the day. You will see that picture of the planet Mercury. And now right in the middle, just about in the middle, is a very bright crater. And you'll see a beeline stringing right through it of other craters and a path where an electric... So you see the streaks of electrical discharges as they crossed over the surface of Mercury. So you see both impact craters, which are clearly impact craters, and then you see the electrical discharge craters with the string, like the bead of electrical discharges, as those electrical discharges from passing comets strung or traveled across the surface of Mercury. So that's very interesting. And so I am suspecting that that's what's going on at Ceres. They're photoshopping the goodness, as I say, out of the photos of Ceres before they release them to the public. Okay, so on to the next topic. Recently, I've been talking about electrical conditions with people. And we are very electrical. Your entire body is an antenna. You are constantly just barraged by electrical conditions, but since science, in their infinite ignorance today, and medical treatments, since they don't recognize any of this, we're all walking around without any medical knowledge of this or attention. There are people who have to move to electrical-free zones. There is so much microwave radiation in the air, artificial, due to transmission of data, wireless, telephones, cell phones, on and on and on. There's so much of this that some people actually become very sick. They're very sensitive to it, and they have to move to a region where there isn't any or very low amounts. Let's look at acupuncture. Now, many people think, oh, that's one of those, alternative medicines or whatever. But these have been proven over centuries and centuries. But let's look at the root effect, cause and effect of acupuncture. Your body is full of nerves, and these are all connected. If you take a pin and you put it in a certain point in your body, it affects the nerves, go to other areas of the body and activate the sensors around other parts of your body. So it's an activation process. Recently, studies on medical marijuana and use to prevent and possibly even cure cancer, here's what it does. It causes every sensor, every nerve sensor in the body to activate. And apparently that is the cause for the, recreational users have an effect. Okay, so but at any rate, in terms of medical, let me go back to a statement that I heard from a doctor one time when I was taking at Tulane, where I got my advanced physics degree. I was taking a biophysics course, and the doctor who taught it was from the Tulane Medical School. And he said, we know what causes cancer. We know the end situation. And here's what's going on. He said that cancer is caused because the cells don't see the cells next to them, so they start growing, trying to bridge the gap. So like if you cut yourself on the skin, any place on your body, and it bleeds a little bit, the cells are going to see that they recognize that they do not see the cell next to them in that direction, so they start to create a cell, and the cell on the other side of that cut does the same thing. And they start creating cells, and it's a special type of cell. It's a healing cell. It's a gap cell. And they start growing, and all of a sudden those cells touch, and they go, we've bridged the gap. Now we can stop creating more cells. And they bridge together, and that has become scar tissue. And if you take enough vitamin E, then the scar tissue doesn't form. You don't get a lot of that type of cell. You get the healthy, normal cells, and you don't have a scar there. And eventually, all the scars on your body heal over. But we all have places on our body where we had a cut or something when we were a kid, and that scar is still there. That scar tissue remains, and it toughens up that area. It's just like calluses. If somebody's working, say we don't work all winter, now that springtime, people are going to go out, and they're going to be the weekend warrior and do the spring garden, and they realize that within a couple hours they have open spots on their hands. And so calluses form, and that's what calluses are. That's that type of cell, that healing cell, that's tougher than your normal cell. It because it thinks, well, that's a place that's getting some abuse, and we want tough skin there as opposed to... So your calluses are the same type of cell as the healing cells, as the scar tissue cells. So back to cancer. The doctor in my biophysics class said that they know what cancer is. It's an uncontrolled growth of cells, and they keep growing without bound because they don't see the cell next to them. And what causes this? Well, we are exposed to solvents, chemical solvents, radiation, all kinds of other environmental hazards today. And when they get into your body, they prevent the transmission of electrical signals from one cell to the other. And so that's what cancer is. So how do you cure it? And why does medical marijuana cure cancer? Because it starts the body signaling. It gets all those cells signaling again. And there are other devices on the market. Remember the Rife electrical device that puts a body in an alternating electric field and at a set frequency, and therefore it gets the body signaling. Acupuncture does the same thing. There's analysis of people's backbones. I know some chiropractors, and what they've studied is that the majority of what we call disease is caused by the fact that signals from the backbone are not getting to organs. And so let's say you, as you age, your backbone is adjusting, it's the actual bones are shrinking in size. We have names for that. But basically, people are getting smaller as they get older. So the little spots where nerves go out of the backbone can be pinched or can stop those signals going out to the organs. And so heart attacks many times are caused not necessarily by problems with your heart, but by problems because the nervous impulse that's going out there from your brain isn't getting there. It's as simple as that. And so exercise, especially as you get older, you need constant exercise daily, more and more every day. Throw away the chairs. This is all leading back to the topic that your body is very electrical. Just a little on a health note, they say that when you start feeling a problem, say with your kidneys or your liver or your heart or lungs or something else, assuming you're not smoking or drinking alcohol or doing something that's damaging or in a very high chemical environment or whatever, assuming that you're not having extra problems piled on your body's systems, the biggest, if they say that by the time you feel it, you have already lost 60% of use of that organ. And probably it's not just one organ, it's probably a number of organs in your body. So a certain backbone disc, nerves come out and they go to certain organs, and it's kind of lateral. It's horizontal. They come out of your backbone and they wrap around. Every vertebrae controls certain organs in your body. And so at any rate, that's the control, and that goes back to the brain. So if the signals from your brain are not getting down the backbone and out the nervous system to your organs, they stop working. And so what do doctors do? They cut you open and they take the organ out. And it's like, no, wrong, wrong, wrong. It's like, it's just bad medicine. What's really wrong with people in 99.9% of all cases is your body just isn't working. The signals aren't getting there. Okay, so anyway, that's medical treatment. And by the way, I just got an email from someone, and this I've talked about before, that cancer treatment is going to be the number one. Well, it is. It's the number one expense in all of medicine today, but it's the number one cash cow. So there's no effort to cure cancer. The cure for cancer has been there all along. Why does the United States have such a high cancer rate and other countries don't have any at all? Well, look at the lifestyle. Look at the all of the abuses that go on to the people in the United States. The chemicals, the food. Oh my goodness, it's just impossible to even find food in the United States. But okay, back to this concept of electrical signaling. Your body is an electrical, an antenna. It is driven by electricity, and all of your cells are sensitive to electromagnetic radiation coming from outside. The Hindu, the Eastern cultures, the religions are based on the idea that you have to connect to the earth. And this is very true. I talked about grounding about a week ago, where you go out in the morning and you walk in the dew. And this, the idea of grounding is you set up the frequencies and the electrical potential of the earth. People take antioxidizing foods. They eat foods and take other things that get rid of free radicals in your body. And those are there because you're walking around in shoes. You get in your car, you go to the office, you sit on carpeting at the office or floor, and all of this is insulating you from the earth. So if you do this long enough, your body is electrically completely detached from the earth. And so the entire point is that there are ways for you to reattach on a daily basis. So they talk about the health benefits of walking around in the morning in the grass outside your house in the morning dew. What is the dew? This is the water that falls out of the night sky because of the moisture condenses as you hit past what is called the dew point. The dew falls and it's on the ground. Well, what does the dew have to do with anything? Well, it's an electrical connection. Remember that the guy in the basement working around, there's a puddle of water and he grabs an electric drill and he electrocutes himself. Water is a very good conductor. And then there's a pipe, a drain pipe or something. So you're basically putting a circuit between the electric drill, 120 volt electricity, and ground, and there you're holding it. Bad news. So that's why newer houses have their arrestors, what do they call GFI arrestors, and if they sense an excess of current, then they just shut off and prevent people from being electrocuted as an electrical protection. But basically, you're a conductor. I want to recount, I was in the laboratory when I was an undergraduate, and we were working on a vacuum chamber. My undergraduate thesis was in something called Auger electrons. That's a French name spelled A-U-G-E-R, Auger electrons. And what you do is you use the wave property of electrons to study crystalline surfaces. And it turns out that the electron wavelength is just right on some crystalline surfaces. You need the wavelength of the light, or in this case, particles, to be approximately the same as the gap in the crystal. And so for molybdenum and tungsten crystals, I was studying the surface of these as my senior thesis. And so we have a vacuum chamber, and we needed a very stable 900 volt DC power supply. Well, any power supply that runs on transistors, or at that time it was tubes, and with an AC power source, has that AC flutter in it. And you really, no matter how much you filter, you can't get that out of there. So we needed a 900-volt power supply that was extremely stable, DC, non-alternating. So what we did is there are batteries out there, you know, the little 9-volt batteries you put in kids' toys, or a radio, a transistor radio, that 9-volt battery. They also make them in 90-volt size, so they're bigger, more powerful. And so the 90-volt batteries, we bought 10 of them, put them in series, soldered them together, but of course understanding that you're dealing with a death machine there. If you touch the tip of that 900-volt leads, that can kill you. It will kill you. And so you have to be extremely careful around the laboratory. It's like anything, you have to know what you're dealing with. Okay, so my lab partner Dan was there, and one day we're working around, and he accidentally caught his little finger, I think it was, and on the high voltage lead that came off of the equipment rack, and his elbow, down by his elbow, touched the rack. So the short story is that Dan, my buddy, in the my lab partner, got his little finger up on the high voltage outlet and by his elbow on the equipment rack, which of course was at ground potential, and bam! I mean, this thing exploded, and it went through his, burned a hole from his little finger down through his arm, and it came out where he was touching the cabinet. And it was smoking, and needless to say, there was a big scream accompanied with this. And I looked at it, and it was a perfect hole. It was like a tunnel down through his arm, and it was so hot that it sealed it. It didn't bleed at all. And needless to say, he was in severe pain. There were no medical ramifications from that. But yes, you are a conductor. Your body is 98% water, and you're a conductor. So at any rate, let's go back to the signaling in the solar system. How does a planet moving around out there affect your body? Well, this is what back in the mid-90s, I've told this story before, it's in my books, the Russian scientists, Alexei Dmitriev and his staff, were studying my work, because it was answering the questions that they had. They were atmospheric scientists, and they were also dealing, they were physicists dealing with solar conditions. They were the first people to discover tornadoes on the sun. And my work explained why tornadoes were electromagnetic phenomena. They were electrical discharges. How are there tornadoes on the sun? And you could see them racing across the sun. They had many photos of these. Well, these were electrical discharges of these, right there, the local solar capacitor. And so they were, during the meetings that they were having where they were translating my work, psychologists from the same university started sitting in because word got out that something interesting was going on. So the psychologists start sitting in on the daily meetings, and they were interested because they were studying the, they wanted to find a scientific basis for astrology, which was the ability of planets and the movement of the planets and the position of the Earth relative to the stars, that this would be affected, the human body would somehow be affected. And the way they were doing this is they had sensors on women and on unborn fetuses that were going to be born in the next month or two. And so anyway, they were sensing the effects of the movement of the planets and alignment of the planets, etc., and they realized that the fetus was responding to the movement of the planets. And so these, of course, were medical studies that were going on at the university. They were very interested because my work explained the electrical conditions of the planets. When the planets aligned, their electrical currents would add together, and say we have Jupiter and Earth aligning. Well, Jupiter has a tremendously long electrical discharge of the solar capacitor. Earth has a very long one, so they meet. All of a sudden, you get a tremendous increase in electrical current. And, of course, that adjusts all the way down through the five layers of our magnetic field, and the ionosphere expands. That causes, and then it can compress, depending on the oscillations that are going on in the external magnetic field. And so this can drive radio signals all the way down to the planet Earth. And we're right down here on the surface of the Earth where the electrical field is 300 volts per meter. I mean, we're living in an extremely high electrical field, and we're attached to it. We're living in this. Our bodies are sensing it. So we're literally sensing what is going on with the planets. And say, let's say Venus is over there in another part of the solar system, and it aligns with little Mercury, let's say. They're the two inner planets of the solar system, and wham, an electrical discharge sets off an electromagnetic pulse, almost like an earthquake pulse, but in the electromagnetic electrically and magnetically, and we sense that. So we're sensing all of these things that are going on. When Mercury is in retrograde, meaning that Mercury comes by and then it seems to go backwards for a little bit in its orbit, we are affected at Earth, and that is a time when generally it is believed that people do not communicate. I remember my good friend Brad Walton, who was a talk show host. I was on his show many times, local Minneapolis talk show host, WCCO Radio, I would call up Brad, and he had a friend who was an astrologer. And I'd say, Brad, I'm talking to people, and it's like there's no communication. You know, I talk and they talk, and it's like, what's going on? And he'd go, oh, Mercury's in retrograde. He would call up his astrologer friend, and he'd say, yeah, this will all end on a certain date. And he said, just wade through it, and on this date, Mercury will come out of retrograde, and everybody will be better. And all of a sudden, that date would come, and everybody, the same people in the same room who were totally miscommunicating before, everybody was communicating fine. It was like, what the heck's going on here? Well, Mercury was in retrograde. These are real effects, and there's a scientific basis for it. So at any rate, your body is very electrical, and it needs its health depends on electricity, good electricity, and it cannot have bad electricity. Modern medicine does not recognize any of this. When you have cancer, they go in and they cut your body and they take out the cancer, not realizing that the reason that that is there is because your body is not communicating. So what do? They cause a scar that's bigger than the scar that was there before. Then they give you chemo, which completely destroys any electrical communication in your body. And if you live through this, you're one of the lucky ones. And if you die, they say that you died of cancer. Not from the so-called cure. This is just 1950s or more like 1650s bloodletting, but it's big money. Chemotherapy is like I forget how many thousands of dollars per session. Oh my goodness! Anyway, enough of that. I'm out of time here. I got about a minute left. Remember, go to my webpage. I encourage everybody to take a look at this course, the new DVD number 4. And the future courses are going to be $50 each, but you have to start with this one to get into the other ones. So what I'm trying to do is recover some of the investment costs to set up the new equipment to produce this first DVD. And then after that, of course, the price will go down. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and you can get the new course for free if you order $400 or more of any combination of products. And that would include my book set, which is required reading for the new course, jmccsci.com. And, of course, that helps support this commercial-free radio show, et cetera, et cetera. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And, as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.